Okay, good to see everybody. As always this evening, as you can see from the title slide here on the 29th of May, we've got our second class in Deuteronomy. The area that we're going to be looking at, a tremendous amount of geographical information that's given in these early chapters of the book of Deuteronomy, is much of it in what is called the modern-day Golan Heights. And so I found the Golan Heights for you here this evening. This is called the Ram Pool, or some call it Lake Ram there, but the tourists usually have lunch. I'm going to find it. Here it is. Usually have lunch in this building right here, which has a beautiful view, you know, out over the lake and all of that. These are the foothills of Mount Hermon. They are the northernmost border of Israel to this day, as they were then, and will be mentioned then in the first chapter. And as we get deeper into this, you know, the Israelites are marching northward, will be coming on into this region, and then having to move back down again in order to cross over and have their battle at Jericho. The first time that they're on the western side of the Jordan. So at this moment, as we saw last week, they're down here in the plains of Moab. Could have been right here in this very field, as a matter of fact. There are an enormous number of them, like the sand of the sea, like the stars in the sky. And that is Mount Nebo, also known as Pisgah, right there, from which, as you saw on the title slide last week, you can see the great majority, the lion's share, of all of the promised land. So here again on these plains, just north and immediately adjacent to the Dead Sea, lowest place on earth, they have come down from a whole series of adventures and a couple of major battles, and all that has been taking place just on the other side of this ridge that you see here, but well to the right, which would be to the south, and to the left, which would be to the north. It is somewhat surprising to me, maybe to you as well, how far they traveled in what is called Transjordan. Transjordan is the term that's used for all the area that's on the eastern side of the Jordan River. And so this country today we call Jordan itself. The river's named after the country, or maybe vice versa. Now I'm not so sure. But in the far north, of course, Syria then borders Jordan. So by the time you get just to the bottom of the Sea of Galilee, everything to the right, everything to the east there now, as the border peels away to the east, Jordan is left behind, and everything northward is Syria. So here in this location, we have what I think, what always strikes me anyway, somehow it gets, you know, to my heart, what is for me just one of the most heartbreaking books in all the Bible. For all that might be said about the book of Psalms, and sometimes it is wonderfully emotional, of course, much of the time, you know, it gets deeply into our emotions. We can relate to the travails of David and the songs that he sings when he's worried, when he's been defeated, or when he's in triumph. And so, you know, we think of the book of Psalms as an emotional book. But when we break the first page in Deuteronomy, Moses is 120 years old. He lived four decades as the adopted grandson to a pharaoh. He had all the advantages of tremendous wealth and power and fame. Then he murdered a man in defense of his real people, fled for his life, and overnight becomes an exile in Midian and a shepherd. And so the jarring change in the circumstances, and then for the next 40 years, this is the life that he leads. What would have been a very lonely life. It would have been not ascetic, because he certainly takes a wife, he has children, but he's living in a wilderness, you know, out in a desert area there, and all of the advantages that he'd had before are gone. 40 years. He learns what it is to be on the other end. And then God calls him, he argues against it. He does not want to be the leader of the Jews. He's scared, he's worried, and so he tries to get out of this. God's having none of it. And the next thing he knows, he's marching back to Egypt, and he's going to have to get into one of the most colossal confrontations with a world leader that ever the world has seen. We have 10 plagues, we have the parting of the Red Sea, and these people now are following him for the next 40 years. And these 40 years are anything but much enjoyable. He has given his life to these people, and he gets nothing, it seems like, but moaning and groaning and whining and grousing and complaining and even death threats. And it's just trouble and trouble and trouble and endless trouble. But there's a God in heaven who has met with him time and time and time again. And he already knows from the end of the book of Numbers before, you know, you get to the book of Deuteronomy. It's all in chronological order through these five books. He knows that he's going to be denied the great prize. He will never be able to set one foot in that promised land. This land that he spent 40 years of his life to suffering like only leaders can. He's had to take the grief from everybody that he's been trying to help, and now he won't even be able to realize that final glorious prize. If you'll keep all of those things in mind, when you're reading the book of Deuteronomy, it is just so emotional. And it always gets to me. It is so hopeful. He's like a father. He still loves these children. He wants them to succeed. He's desperate for them to get it right finally. Here's the grand realization of all of our dreams. And so he's moved by the Spirit of God. He's ordered by God to try and stimulate these people to devotion, to faithfulness, to commitment. He's trying desperately, like father loves his son, to help these people do right. Right now that they are confronted with what will be the greatest blessing of all of their lives. Only Moses and Joshua and Caleb are over the age of 60. Everybody he's talking to, by the tens, maybe hundreds of thousands, are people who are 60 years old or younger. Everybody that was 20, 40 years ago and older had died in the wilderness for their unfaithfulness, and Moses had to bury every last one of them. This because they'd failed in their faith. So his heart is just torn in so many directions. And then God is telling him about a future that is greater even than his own. You're about to die. It's soon. And so, okay, you've got that on your mind. But he's also going to be led in the passages we'll be looking at tonight to the first of what will be several grand prophecies about the sweeping scope of centuries that lie ahead for these people. And in these prophecies, he has to deal with their coming unfaithfulness, with the punishments that they're going to experience. It's just such an emotional book to try to put yourself into Moses' shoes as he walks back and forth here in these plains, still beset upon by these people, you know, to solve their problems. And we can't quite tell for sure, but perhaps on more than one occasion, climbing up into those hills, up to the top of Pisgah, and thinking about what he's going to see, if only one time, and I'm not sure as I've said, then fine, he knows that that fateful moment's going to come when he's going to climb for the last time those hills. So tonight, what you're about to discover, you saw half of it last week, is that the first four chapters are dedicated to a recitation of all that history. So last week we had a general introduction to the book, but we also read the first two chapters. Tonight I'm hoping, though that fourth chapter's got 49 verses in it, so it's huge. I'm hoping to get up through the fourth chapter. And for a second time, I'm going to venture, you know, stick my neck out of the turtle shell here, to spend most of that time just reading the book. It is fairly self-explanatory. But there's hardly a word, I think, that should be left out. And so it's the kind of a book that I fear is a great temptation to give short shrift. And again, meaning no harsh words whatsoever. But two of the men that I just revere, Jim Putterbach, who I count as one of the greatest scholars of the 20th century, Lowell Williams, who I'd put up there as one of the very best teachers maybe of all time. You know, can you imagine? Lowell finished off the book of Deuteronomy in seven classes, and I'm too deep already. We have cut out the second chapter. Jim did it in 1982, the class I'm listening to, in two nights. Now, bear in mind, Jim Selden preached for less than an hour and 15 minutes, so there's some compensation there. But, you know, they go through it so fast, and it breaks my heart. So I'm just begging you, you know, to be patient with me, maybe. But hopefully I can set your heart aflame as well. This is, I think, just the deepest insight you're going to get into the man that we know as Moses. A man who truly changed world history. A man who suffered like few ever have, but who also had moments of just, you know, glorious faithfulness. A man who's pleading on behalf of these people as well as pleading for them. He has saved their lives on a number of occasions when God was done with them and just wanted to wipe them out. Moses would stand up and plead for the people that had given him all this grief. And so there's just depths of love and passion to be found in the book of Deuteronomy if we'll just remember, you know, how dramatic that these circumstances are at the end of the 40 years in the wilderness, at the end of the 120 years of Moses' life, and at the start of what is this new kingdom of Israel about to come full-blown into their brand new land. So, we do need to go back over just a few of the things we saw last week. I've added the maps this week. I realize, unless you're sitting pretty close, you know, like these people are already here. It'll be hard for you to see all of this. But this is the overview from way down here at the top of what the Red Sea, we call it the Gulf of Aqaba today. And then through this big valley, which is referred to in your Bible frequently, we'll be seeing it today, the Arabah, A-R-A-B-A-H, which extends actually through the entire Dead Sea and up into this region as well. And then you're going to be seeing the word Negev, N-E-G-E-V. That means south or southern. So on this map, I'm going to give you a close-up in a minute. On this map, this region right here is called the Negev Highlands. And clearly, you've got some mountainous terrain here. But this is the Negev up here as well. You've got Amalek on here. You've got Amorites that are fighting all the time and back and forth in this area. And in the time frame we're in, it's Amorites that are going to be mentioned. And, of course, you've got this green line right here. This is Kadesh Barnea. Mount Hor is here where Aaron will die. They made the foray up here to the border, and they could have gone in and taken their promised land, but what? They failed in faith. Everybody over the age of 20 is going to die. 40 years wandering down here in this wilderness. But at this time, they've been told to come down through here all the way to the bottom to avoid Edom, which is Esau, then come across the Arabah here and up into the highlands. If you could see this red line all the way to the top, that's what's called the King's Highway, one of the most famous highways in history. Major mercantile route there, trade route that exists there. So apparently they're coming up on the far side of this ridgeline, runs the whole way alongside the Arabah there, and they're going to have adventure after adventure. Here's Mount Seir, here's the Zered River, here's the Arnon, this is the Yarmouk, you got the Jabbok right here, clear to the Sea of Galilee and beyond with Bashan. That's going to be the last thing that they need to take care of before they can head back south again and then enter right on the north side to Jericho here to cross over eventually into their promised land. So at the time that Deuteronomy is written, all of this traveling has taken place. They failed to get in. They spent 39 years in the wilderness. They've come through here. They've fought their way through much of this, all the way up to Bashan. They've come back down, and here's Mount Nebo, also called Pisgah, and right down there at the bottom of the hill is where these people are when we start with chapter 1 in verses 3 through 7. Chapter 1, 3 through 7. It came about in the 40th year, on the first day of the 11th month, that Moses spoke to the children of Israel according to all that Yahweh had commanded him to give to them, after he had defeated Sihon, the king of the Amorites, who lived in Heshbon, and Og, the king of Bashan, who lived in Ashtaroth and Edrei. So they've come 250 miles just from the top of the Gulf of Aqaba all the way up into Bashan, All of that's talked about in the book of Numbers, and now they've come back down again. So what we've got, if we zoom into the red area that I've got right here, just a close-up, but we're on our way now eventually to get to this first big battle here with Sihon. So that's where we're headed. 250 miles to Bashan is probably, well, it would be exactly 150 miles that they've had to walk to get up to here. And who knows, maybe 1,000 in the 40 years that they were wandering in that wilderness. Now, that area is the Negev again, the southern reaches below the border of Israel, which to this day, on a laser beam surveyor's system, runs straight from there to Gaza. It's just as straight as can be. So that is, to this day, the southern tip of Israel. There's your Arabah again. And then, if I can get over here, we're going to go to Deuteronomy now, chapter 1, verses 19 and 20. We set out from Horeb, also known as... Okay. Next week, we're going to start the book of Deuteronomy. Okay. Horeb is also Sinai. Those two are one and the same. We set out from Horeb, went through all that great and terrible wilderness which you saw on the way to the hill country of the Amorites, just as the Lord our God had commanded us, and we came to Kadesh Barnea. Pointed it out a moment ago. And then I said to you, you've come to the hill country of the Amorites, which Yahweh our God is about to give us. Skip to 26 and 27. Yet you were not willing to go up, but rebelled against the command of Yahweh your God, and you grumbled in your tents and said, because Yahweh hates us, he's brought us out of the land of Egypt to deliver us into the hand of the Amorites to destroy us. Where can we go up? Our brethren have made our hearts melt. People are bigger and taller. Cities are large, fortified. You know, and that's all that terrible faithfulness, which now we come down to verses 34 through 37, ends up like this. Yahweh heard the sound of your words. He was angry, took an oath, saying, not one of these men, this evil generation, shall see the good land which I swore to give your fathers, except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh. He shall see it. And to him and to his sons I will give the land on which he has set foot, because he has followed the Lord fully. Now, if you wanted to, you could write a little number one next to this verse 37. In my white margin Bible, I put Moses, and then the apostrophe to show the possessive, Moses' sorrow, number one, verse 37. Yahweh was angry with me also on your account, saying, not even you shall enter there. Here's where all that disappointment sets in, but what also is there? Some resentment too. And it's true. The people tempted the Lord. They made life tough for Moses. Moses then made a mistake when he struck the rock. And it will cost him the hope of his life. So now we'll zoom in on the red area there, which is this region again. So as I say, we're going to be marching all the way up along here eventually to have this battle with Sihon. So I'm just wanting to give you the close-up. You can see these various nations as we read these various passages then. So in this region, on the eastern side of the Jordan, Transjordan, in the country we call Jordan now, we see the first five verses in Deuteronomy chapter 2. We turned and set out for the wilderness by the way to the Red Sea, as the Lord spoke to me, and circled Mount Seir for many days. And Yahweh spoke to me, saying, you have circled this mountain long enough. Now turn north and command the people, saying, you will pass through the territory of your brothers, the sons of Esau, who live in Seir. And they will be afraid of you, so be very careful. Do not provoke them, for I will not give you any of their land, even as little as a footstep, because I've given Mount Seir to Esau as a possession. So Esau and Edom, leave them alone. Verse 9, then Yahweh said to me, do not harass Moab, nor provoke them to war. For I will not give you any of their land as a possession, because I've given Ar to the sons of Lot as a possession. And again in verse 19, apparently Lot had more sons. When you come opposite the sons of Ammon, do not harass them, nor provoke them. For I will not give you any of the land of the sons of Ammon as a possession, because I've given it to the sons of Lot as a possession. So, you're going to have to do this whole dive south to stay away from Edom. You're not going to bother them. Then you got to come up here through this land of Moab. You're not going to take any of that land. You're going to get up here in the land of the Ammonites. You're going to leave a lot of that land alone. Or at least you could if Sihon would have only let you. So then what happens is, chapter 2, verses 32 through 37, Sihon, with all his people, came out to meet us in battle at Jahaz. It'd be pronounced Yahaz, probably. The J's sound like Y's in their language. 33, and Yahweh our God delivered him over to us. We defeated him with his sons and all his people. So we captured all his cities at that time, utterly destroyed the men, the women, and children of every city. We left no survivor. We took only the animals and our booty and the spoil of the cities which we had captured. From Aroer, which is on the edge of the valley of Arnon, and from the city which is in the valley, even to Gilead, there was no city that was too high for us. Yahweh our God delivered all over to us. Only you did not go near to the land of the sons of Ammon, all along the river Jabbok, and the cities of the hill country, and wherever the Lord our God had commanded us. That Jabbok River is this one right coming in here. Okay, so what's going on? We just had a whole book to tell you all of this in Numbers. Well, brethren, it's because people forget things. Like, what's the other name for Horeb? You know, they forget stuff. And so Moses is the ultimate teacher called upon God to try to rehearse 40 years of history with these people in four chapters. And it will form the foundation of the rest of the book. It is what underlies, it is the ground of his argument for the whole rest of the book. If you would only remember what God has done for you, if you would just keep it in your mind, if you would meditate upon it, if you just knew your own history, you would be enthralled, you would be amazed, you'd be obsessed with the love for your God. You would be absolutely fearless, and you would live long in the land. Your enemies will all be defeated before you. The rains will never stop in their season. The ground will never stop pushing up the fruits of the earth. It's going to be a perfect life for you as long as you remember that Yahweh is your God and what he's done for you. So leave Esau alone, leave Moab alone, leave the Ammonites alone, but you're going to have to destroy this Sihon, king of the Jews. So this map, which is just this little tiny area up in here from the main map, this is Bashan. So this kind of orange area right here, as you can see, is about two-thirds of the way up the Jordan from the Dead Sea, and there's that Jabbok River. That's the southern border. Here's Bashan, where Saul and his sons are going to be killed and hung on the wall so many years later. The Sea of Kinnereth, also known as the Sea of Galilee, also known as the Sea of Shinnereth, also known as the Sea of Tiberias, because Tiberias has always been the biggest city on the Sea of Galilee, as it is still, you know, to this day. This is all part of this land of Bashan. Amos, long years later, is going to talk about those cows of Bashan, you know, fat and happy and faithless. And so it compares the women of this area at that time, which is a Jewish area. There's going to be tribal allotments in here. This area now is what we're going to be reading about in chapter 3. Then we turned and went up the road to Bashan, and Og, king of Bashan, with all his people, came out to meet us in battle at Edrei. Now, I do want to make one more point. Forgot I skipped over it. In the last part of chapter 2, how many cities did they capture? 60. We just read it. 60 of them. All right. How much booty can you get out of 60 cities? Pretty much. They had a lot when they left Egypt. They were able to buy their way. Remember? They appealed to the Edomites, so they got rejected, but they appealed to these people, you know, and said, we'll pay for everything. We'll pay for our water. We'll pay for our food. We'll pay for everything. Just let us walk through on the king's highway. Just let us do that. Well, they're getting all of this money for their eventual entrance into their promised land, replenished now by Sihon and by Og. So we turned and went up the road to Bashan, and Og, king of Bashan, with all his people, came out to meet us in battle at Edrei. But the Lord said to me, do not fear him, for I've delivered him and all his people in this land into your hand, and you shall do to him just as you did to Sihon, king of the Amorites, who lived at Heshbon. So Yahweh our God delivered Og also, king of Bashan, with all his people into our hand. We smote them until no survivor was left, and we captured all his cities at that time. There was not a city which we did not take from them. 60 cities. Uh-oh. Maybe that's where the 60 came from. Oops. All right, 60 cities now then. Remember this one. All right, 60 cities. And now I've lost my place here, laughing myself so hard. The region of Argob, the kingdom of Og and Bashan. Verse 5. All these were cities fortified with high walls, gates, and bars, besides a great many unwalled towns. And we utterly destroyed them, as we did to Sihon, king of Heshbon, utterly destroying the men, women, and children of every city. But all the animals and the spoil of the cities we took as our booty. Now, typically people, you know, for very good reason, are curious about this. So let's just spend just a moment on it. Who did they kill? They killed the men. Killed the women, and they killed the children. They killed absolutely every living thing in the country. Now today, we immediately recoil in horror and we start talking about innocence and how wrong all of this is. Who gave the orders for them to do this? God did. And God, of course, knows what he's doing. Now, there's a proverb that says, you know, you can know a man even from his childhood. And if you've ever raised any kids, you know what that's like. From a very early age, you start noticing all kinds of personality traits and characteristics. And you start saying, well, I'm going to have trouble with this one. That kind of thing. And so, you know, there are certain qualities that get established very, very early. And if, as a young child still, everything you've known has been the purest form of evil, so bad that God can't tolerate it anymore. He has to come in punishment and destroy those people because their iniquity is full, to use the expression from Genesis 15 about the Amorites, you know, back clear in Genesis before Moses even appeared on the scene. God knows that there's two things you have to worry about in the young ones. If they have any kind of age at all, they're going to resent the fact you killed their parents. And that resentment can turn into all kinds of rebellion and insurrection and problems. But they're also likely, to remembering that, to not want to accept your God. They're going to be a constant source of temptation and trouble. God wants these Jews to start off with an absolutely clean slate. So I agree that God, you know, prior to some particular age, for different for each person, when they come to this age of accountability, you know, God freely accepts infants into heaven. They can't be guilty of a sin. Where there is no law, there is no sin. They haven't come to understand law. They haven't come to understand sin. You know, I understand all of that is true. But when you say man, woman, and child, we're talking about children, the majority of whom are old enough to become a major problem for the Jews. So God knows they're already, if you want to use the term, infected with this immorality and with this false doctrine, and he can't have it living among these people. So they've earned it, they're going to die, and then we'll move in and start afresh. It's always been God's way, and one day I suppose it'll happen to us as well. So if you wanted to do like I did, and it'll help if you do something like this, because then you can look back over these four chapters when we get done tonight, and you go look back over these four chapters, if you have these little indexes, you can see Moses' argument. You can also see his passion, his heartbreak. So in chapter 3, verses 1 through 7, is the conquest of Bashan. B-A-S-H-A-N, the conquest of Bashan. Then, in verses 8 all the way down to 17, we have the summary of the Transjordan conquests. The summary of the eastern conquests. Verse 8. Thus we took the land at that time from the hand of the two kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan, from the valley of Arnon to Mount Hermon, from the bottom to the top of the entire stretch of this land. Sidonians call Hermon Sirion, and the Amorites call it Senir. All the cities of the tableland, and all Gilead, and all Bashan, as far as Salaca and Edrei, cities of the kingdom of Og in Bashan. For only Og, king of Bashan, was left of the remnant of the Rephaim. I read about them last week. Behold, his bedstead was an iron bedstead in Rabba of the sons of Ammon. Its length was what in feet?
13.5 by 6.
It's 13.5 feet long by 6. How big do you have to be to need a bed like that? That's a pretty big boy. Okay? So there were giants in the ancient time. Until when? They're right here, apparently. He's the end of the Rephaim, at least, that particular branch of those giants. He's the end. Now, we're going to meet Goliath, of course, much later, but here's the end of this particular line. Only Og was left of the Rephaim. Then we got 12. We took possession of this land at that time from Aroer, which is by the valley of the Arnon, so way south, half the hill country of Gilead and all its cities I gave to the Reubenites and to the Gadites. The rest of Gilead and all Bashan, the kingdom of Og, I gave to the half-tribe of Manasseh. All the region of Argob, concerning all Bashan, it is called the land of Rephaim. Yair, the son of Manasseh, took all the region of Argob, as far as the border of the Geshurites and the Maacathites, and called it Bashan, after his own name, Havoth Yair, as it is to this day. To Maker I gave Gilead, to the Reubenites and to the Gadites I gave from Gilead, even as far as the valley of Arnon, the middle of the valley, as a border, and as far as the river Jabbok, the border of the sons of Ammon. The Arabah also, with the Jordan as a border, from Shinnereth, even as far as the Sea of the Arabah, the Salt Sea, at the foot of the slopes of Pisgah on the east. So, here's our close-up of Bashan. He's describing the whole thing. Here's the Jabbok, you know, coming in to the Jordan down there. So, he's just describing all of this region right here. And it's all been what? Conquered. All 100 miles of it. If they want to get up and fight the Jews, then what is the only possible result? Jews win, everybody else loses. Okay? This is the area right now, about half of that Bashan, is today what we call the Golan Heights. And they're still fighting over it. It's been this way, you know, for all centuries. I guess it always will be. You know, contested land up there. Surprisingly, we always think of it as desert, you know, but there's a spring in, you know, there, and they get all kinds of grass and crops and whatnot. It's really a great land for sheep and goats and whatnot, cattle. And I showed you a picture last Sunday, as a matter of fact, of cattle on a field, and it was one that I snapped right up here in the Golan Heights last time I was there. Okay, so what you've got, we just read, is the summary of the Transjordan conquest. Now, starting at verse 18 and going to verse 20, you have the Transjordan tribes commanded to help all the other tribes secure their land. So we've just been hearing, you know, I gave the Gadites who live here in Gilead, you know, and the Manassites are going to be involved in Bashan and Gilead and all these areas. We just heard about all of that. Well, now they're home. Can they stay home? Well, their wives and their children can. What do all the fighting men have to do? Stay with the army, go back down to Pisgah, into this plain of Moab, to hear this sermon, and then go to war, and north and south, take everything on the other side of the river. They got everything in the east, now they need to go get everything on the west. But you can't just abandon your brothers. They fought all of us to get you your land. Now you got to stay in the army. So it reads like this in verses 18 through 20. Then I commanded you at that time, saying, Yahweh your God has given you this land to possess it. All you valiant men shall cross over armed before your brothers, the sons of Israel. But your wives, your little ones, your livestock, I know you have much livestock, shall remain in your cities which I've given you. Now, if you remember the other places in your Bible, why did those people want that land? It's because they had all that livestock. And what kind of land is it? Prime grazing land. It's prime livestock land. They saw that. Their eyes bugged out of their heads. They said, we want this. Okay. Now, in 20, the livestock and the family shall remain in your cities which I've given you, 20, until Yahweh gives rest to your fellow countrymen as to you. They also possess the land which the Lord your God will give them beyond the Jordan. Then you may return every man to his possession which I've given you. So the call to arms. Then he speaks to Joshua in 21 and 22. Speaks to Joshua. I commanded Joshua at that time, saying, your eyes have seen all that Yahweh your God has done to these two kings. So Yahweh shall do to all the kingdoms into which you're about to come. Do not fear them. For Yahweh your God is the one fighting for you. He keeps repeating history. Ancient history, as well as recent history, over and over and over again. Single sermon. It's only four chapters. Then, from the remainder of this chapter 3, verses 23 through 29, we have Moses' sorrow. Number 2. I also pleaded with Yahweh at that time, saying, O Lord Yahweh, you've given to show your servant your greatness and your strong hand, for what God is there in heaven or on earth who can do such works and mighty acts as yours? Let me, I pray, cross over and see the fair land that is beyond the Jordan, that good hill country and Lebanon. Yahweh was angry with me on your account and would not listen to me. And Yahweh said to me, enough, speak to me no more of this matter. Go up to the top of Pisgah, lift up your eyes to the west and north and south and east and see it with your eyes. For you shall not cross over this Jordan. But charge Joshua and encourage him and strengthen him, for he shall go across at the head of this people. He shall give them as an inheritance in the land which you will see. So we remained in the valley opposite Beth Peor. And thus begins the fourth and the final in this sermon. In this sermon, starting in chapter 4, verses 1 through 4, is warning to obey. You better obey me. So he gives them the solid warning now in 1 through 4. And now, O Israel, listen to the statutes and the judgments which I'm teaching you to perform, in order that you may live and go in and take possession of the land which Yahweh, the God of your fathers, is giving you. You shall not add to the word which I'm commanding you, nor take away from it, that you may keep the commandments of Yahweh your God, which I command you. Your eyes have seen what Yahweh has done in the case of Baal Peor. For all the men who followed Baal Peor, Yahweh your God has destroyed them from among you. But you who held fast to Yahweh your God are alive today, every one of you. Now, it's a warning to obey. It's also a warning against idolatry, because if you want to make a note, 24,000 Jews died that day by a plague because they were lured into it by the peoples that were practicing all this idolatry. And instead of withstanding the temptation, they fell prey to it, and 24,000 people were killed in that day in Numbers chapter 25. Let me make sure that's correct. Yeah, 25, first nine verses. Okay, now we're in chapter 4, verses 5 through 8. This passage, I've only recently both discovered, really, and also come to appreciate immensely. See, in verse 5 through 8, I've taught you statutes and judgments just as Yahweh my God commanded me, that you should do thus in the land where you are entering to possess it. So keep and do them, for that is your wisdom and your understanding in the sight of the peoples who will hear all these statutes and say, surely this great nation is a wise and understanding people. For what great nation is there that has a God so near to it as is Yahweh, our God, whenever we call on Him? Or what great nation is there that has statutes and judgments as righteous as this whole law which I'm setting before you today? Now, if you've been with me on Sunday mornings in the Bible class, we've been studying marriage, divorce, and remarriage now for 5 weeks, and I've been pointing out in the last couple of them, Moses did no such thing as lower the standard for the Jews. He raised it, and he just said so, particularly in that verse 8. He says, everybody's going to see this law, and they're going to see you, and you represent me. And when they do, they're going to marvel. What God have we ever heard of that's this powerful? What God have we ever heard of that's this wise? What God have we ever heard of that is this righteous? They will see those three things. You Jews, you keep this law that I'm giving you, and you'll be set above everybody like the city on the hill that Jesus talks about so much later. Watch. Everybody's paying attention to you. Now live your life right. So these are, I put in my Bible, the Jews are to be the light of the world. It doesn't use the phrase, but they are set apart as the standard for everybody else to aspire to. They are not cut a break and given a pass so they can start dumping wives by the side of the highway for any reason at all. That's just not taking place. To get specific about our Sunday morning class. Now, in verses 9 through 14, as if you haven't heard this word remember enough, 9 through 14 is remember Mount Sinai. Reads like this. Only give heed to yourself and keep your soul diligently, lest you forget the things which your eyes have seen, and lest they depart from your heart all the days of your life. But make them known to your sons and your grandsons. Remember the day you stood before Yahweh your God at Horeb, when Yahweh said to me, assemble the people to me that I may let them hear my words, so they may learn to fear me all the days they live on the earth, and that they may teach their children. And you came near and stood at the foot of the mountain. And the mountain burned with fire to the very heart of the heavens. Darkness, cloud, and thick gloom. Then Yahweh spoke to you from the midst of the fire. You heard the sound of words, but you saw no form, only a voice. So He declared to you His covenant, which He commanded you to perform, the Ten Commandments. And He wrote them on two tablets of stone 39 years ago. And the Lord commanded me at that time to teach you statutes and judgments that you might perform them in the land where you are going over to possess it. 39 years they've had the law of Moses. 39 years, but they haven't had their land. And now they're coming home to that land. They're bringing that tabernacle. They're bringing that religion. They're bringing those priests. They're bringing those sacrifices. They're bringing these statutes and commandments to be the light of the world. All the nations will take note. Remember Sinai. Forget that and you lose everything. Verses 15 through 24. Avoid idolatry. Watch yourselves in verse 15. Carefully, since you did not see any form on the day Yahweh spoke to you at Horeb from the midst of the fire. lest you act corruptly and make a graven image for yourselves in the form of any figure, the likeness of male or female. If they didn't see God, can they carve a statue that looks like Him? Well, of course not. The likeness of any animal that's on the earth, the likeness of any winged bird that flies in the sky, the likeness of anything that creeps on the ground, the likeness of any fish that's in the water below the earth. Beware as you lift up your eyes to heaven, see the sun and the moon and the stars, all the host of heaven, and be drawn away and worship them and serve them, those which Yahweh your God has allotted to all the peoples under the whole heavens. But Yahweh has taken you and brought you out of the iron furnace from Egypt to be a people for His own possession as today. Verses 21 and 22 are Moses' sorrow, number 3. Now, Yahweh was angry with me, and for the third time, what does He add? On your account. And swore that I should not cross the Jordan, that I should not enter the good land which Yahweh your God is giving you as an inheritance, for I shall die in this land. I shall not cross the Jordan, that you shall cross and take possession of this good land. Brethren, if there is a beating heart in any one of those people, after a man has said, I led you for 40 years to this point to give you a magnificent land in which you can't fail but to love everything in life, and I can't go because you tempted me to sin and I fell when you did it. If there's a beating heart in their chests, would that move you? Can't you hear yourself saying, I'm going to do right when I get over there? I am. I don't want to sin. I don't want to lose things. I don't want to wind up like the disappointment I see in Moses. But continuing now to the end of that section on avoiding idolatry with verses 23 and 24. So watch yourselves lest you forget the covenant of Yahweh your God which He made with you, and make for yourselves a graven image in the form of anything which Yahweh your God has commanded you. For Yahweh your God is a consuming fire, a jealous God. Well, I guess when Moses didn't honor Him, what happened to the hope of entering the promised land? Now, verses 25 through 31 is the first of Moses' prophecies. Moses' prophecy about future, hundreds of years off, apostasy and restoration. 25 through 31. When you become the father of children and children's children and have remained long in the land and act corruptly and make an idol in the form of anything and do that which is evil in the sight of Yahweh your God so as to provoke Him to anger, I call heaven and earth to witness against you today that you shall surely perish quickly from the land where you are going over the Jordan to possess it. You shall not live long on it, but shall be utterly destroyed. And Yahweh will scatter you among the peoples, and you shall be left few in number among the natives where Yahweh shall drive you, and there you will serve gods, the work of men's hands, wood and stone, which neither see nor hear nor eat nor smell. But from there you will seek Yahweh your God, and you will find Him if you search for Him with all your heart and all your soul. When you're in distress and all these things have come upon you, in the latter days you will return to Yahweh your God and listen to His voice. For Yahweh your God is a compassionate God. He will not fail you, nor destroy you, nor forget the covenant with your fathers, which He swore to them. Now they've got to repent to get everything back, but God will remember that covenant if they do. Now, brethren, we're going to see this played out in all the rest of the historical books of the Old Testament, and it's going to culminate with the prophecy of Jesus about their ultimate destruction in Matthew 23, 24, and 25. And then, of course, Josephus will record the whole event for us. But this will be the first of Moses' prophecies in the book of Deuteronomy. Now, I'm going to use a rhetorical question as the boundary for this next section. It's a pretty big one. It's 32 through 40. Verses 32 through 40 is God using Moses in another almost poetic presentation. So the rhetorical question I'm using is, have any people been so blessed? Have any people been so blessed? 32. Indeed, ask now concerning the former days which were before you, since the day that God created man on the earth, and inquire from one end of the heavens to the other. Has anything been done like this great thing? Has anything been heard like it? Has any people heard the voice of God speaking from the midst of the fire as you have heard and survived? Or has a God tried to take for himself a nation from within another nation by trials, by signs and wonders, and by war, and by a mighty hand, and by an outstretched arm, and by great terrors, as Yahweh your God did for you in Egypt before your eyes? To you it was shown that you might know that Yahweh, He is God. There's no other besides Him. Out of the heavens He let you hear His voice to discipline you. And on earth He let you see His great fire, and you heard His words from the midst of the fire, because He loved your fathers. Therefore He chose their descendants after them. And He personally brought you from Egypt by this great power, driving out from before you nations greater and mightier than you, to bring you in and give you their land for an inheritance, as it is today. Know therefore today, and take it to your heart, that Yahweh, He is God in heaven above and on the earth below. There is no other. So you shall keep His statutes and His commandments, which I am giving you today, that it may go well with you and with your children after you, and that you may live long on the land which Yahweh your God has given you for all time. Isn't that a powerful appeal? Persuasive, moving. Verses 41 through 43 are the three sanctuary cities. Moses set apart three cities across the Jordan to the east that a manslayer might flee there who unintentionally slew his neighbor without having enmity toward him in time past. By fleeing to one of these cities, he might live. Bezer, in the wilderness on the plateau for the Reubenites, Ramoth in Gilead for the Gadites, and Golan in Bashan for the Manassites. Okay, now we'll finish the chapter, verses 44 through 49, with the Transjordan conquest complete. The completion of the Transjordan conquest. Now this is the law which Moses set before the sons of Israel. These are the testimonies and the statutes and the ordinances which Moses spoke to the sons of Israel when they came out from Egypt, across the Jordan, in the valley opposite Beth Peor, in the land of Sihon, king of the Amorites, who lived at Heshbon, whom Moses and the sons of Israel defeated when they came out from Egypt. They took possession of his land, and the land of Og, king of Bashan, the two kings of the Amorites, who were across the Jordan, there's your Transjordan, to the east, from Aroer, which is on the edge of the valley of Arnon, even as far as Mount Sion, that is Hermon, with all the Arabah across the Jordan to the east, even as far as the Sea of the Arabah, at the foot of the slopes of Pisgah. This morning, it's about 3 o'clock in the morning, I read the first six chapters of this book out loud. I just wanted to feel it. I didn't take a break, read six chapters through out loud. One of the most moving experiences of my life. If you'll take it all at once, read it like you're Moses, and you just see two dozen different arguments in there. Is there another thing he could have said that could reach into somebody's heart and move them to say, I will serve Yahweh, the only true and living God, with all my heart and all my soul? He has blessed us in our eyes with what no nation has ever imagined, heard, or seen. I will serve my God when I get into this promised land. And, to use the expression from Lowell Williams, as I told you, I've been listening to his classes and all this too, how long did that memory last? About as long as a cup of coffee. And swim, put it. All they had to do was walk across the water to Jericho, and what happened? Already, Achan's going to mess up. They're going to be defeated in Ai because he took something under the ban. And then the rest of their history is just what? Repetition after repetition of faithlessness. Brethren, are we any different at all? We're just the same kind of people. There's nothing new under the sun. We're just people like they were in every way. Teach yourself, your children, and your grandchildren ought to be the title of this sermon. With every moving argument that God could give to Moses, and then all of the personal pathos of what this man is about to lose in his life, which is the hope of his life, to just plant one sandal on the west side of the Jordan River. Amen.